नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So this morning we are reading from 5th Canto,
chapter 14, text 10.
Again, we have a text in prose, so we will just read through. Kvacit sakrita. Kvacit. Sometimes. Sakrit. Once. Avagata. Vishaya vaitahya. Becoming conscious of the uselessness of enjoying material sense gratification. Svayam himself. Para abhidhyanena. By the bodily concept of the self. Vibramshita. Destroyed. Smriti, whose remembrance? Taya, by that. Eva, certainly. Marichitoya, water in a mirage. Prayan, similar to. Tan, those sense objects. Eva, certainly. Abhidhavati runs after. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The conditioned soul sometimes personally appreciates the futility of sense enjoyment in the material world, and he sometimes considers material enjoyment to be full of miseries. However, due to his strong bodily conception, his memory is destroyed, and again he runs after material enjoyment, just as an animal runs after a mirage in the desert. Purport. The main disease in material world is the bodily conception. Being baffled again and again in material activity, the conditioned soul temporarily thinks of the futility of material enjoyment. But he again tries the same thing. By the association of devotees, a person may become convinced of the material futility, but he cannot give up his engagement, although he is very eager to return home, back to Godhead. Under these circumstances, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, compassionately takes away all the material possessions of such a devotee. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, Yasyaham anugrahami harishyetad danam shanai. Lord Krishna says that he takes everything away from the devotee whom he especially favors. When that devotee is overly attached to material possessions, when everything is taken away, the devotee feels helpless and frustrated in society, friendship and love. He feels that his family does not care for him any longer, and he therefore completely surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. This is a special favor granted by the Lord to a devotee who cannot fulfill surrender to the Lord due to a strong bodily conception. As explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 22.39, Ami vidya e murke vishaya kene diba. The Lord understands the devotee who hesitates to engage in the Lord's service, not knowing whether he should again try to revive his material life. After repeated attempts and failures, he fully surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord then gives him directions, and attaining happiness, he forgets all material engagement. Kvacit svakrit avagya vishaya vaitathaya svayam parabhidye janena vibramshita smritish smritis tayaiva marichitoya prayam stan evbi eva bi dhavati. The conditioned soul sometimes personally appreciates the futility of sense enjoyment in the material world, and he sometimes considers material enjoyment to be full of miseries. However, due to his strong bodily conception, his memory is destroyed, and again he runs after after material enjoyment, just as an animal runs after a mirage in the desert.
Amagyanatimirandasya gyananjana chalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaham namo vishnu paraya krishna prashta bhutale shimate aktivananta swamini tinamine namaste sarasvate deva goramani pracharne nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarine jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shadvaita gadadara shivasadi gaura bhaktavrinda hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama hare rama 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 hare hare.
So here we have one of the quite famous analogies that has been presented in Srimad Bhagavatam, that the whole material world basically is the world of illusion, and everyone is running after that illusion. Everybody is considering that there is something tangible, that there is something substantial in something that factually doesn't have any substance, as that very nicely entitled book by Suhotra Maharaj, Substance and the Shadow. So this material world, of course, he is discussing various kinds of perceptions, various kinds of epistemology, or the processes of acquiring knowledge, which definitely helps us to understand what the real knowledge is, because we have different kinds of perceptions, definitely. And because the initial one, that pratyaksha or anumana even, which comes later on, they're both incomplete. Therefore we are always in illusion, because we cannot ascertain what the real reality of this material world is. So we come to some conclusion here in this material world based on those kinds of processes or epistemologies, basically, through which acquire some understanding about this material universe. And our main drive is somehow or other to gain some happiness through sense enjoyment, which is described here as well. But it's all an illusion. It's all an illusion because it's not perfect and because it's temporary. We know that whatever is temporary, it is not real. It is just something that lasts for a short period of time, and it doesn't therefore satisfy any of our desires, any of our hankerings, any of our ideas that we consider that we should pursue, or that it is kind of something on the absolute level. So any kind of sense enjoyment never satisfies practically anybody. So we are pursuing happiness, which is absolutely illusory. To some degree, it is stated, definitely we will have some experience of some kind of flickering happiness, and this is what this material world is all about. But unfortunately, this flickering happiness, chapala sukha, it's something that will never satisfy the spirit soul. It is just temporary cessation that we are baffled with. That's all. It's just some kind of temporary cessation. And it will never give us some permanent happiness that we can hold upon it. And this is why we are always cheated, just like this deer in a desert is always cheated, thinking that there is some water somewhere in the, you know, that there is some kind of oasis that exists, and it keeps on running until it finally dies. So similarly, in this material world, we also run after some kind of illusory conceptions of happiness. We might have some flickering experience of something that is kind of temporarily satisfying, but that kind of experience definitely will never satisfy us as the spirit soul. It is very interesting to understand that it is just about particular type of identification that we try to measure that kind of happiness or distress. We think that if we identify as any particular person or anybody, you know, in particular position, and we consider that particular type of work or activity or particular type of whatever thing we may acquire, that this is going to make us happy. But actually, when we realize that this has nothing to do really with us ourselves, then we remain disappointed and frustrated. So we identify with something, and we see that people, like, say you may live in a particular community, or you may live in a particular society, or you may live in any particular environment. And whatever people do in such an environment, you consider that you should also pursue the same thing. That's the general notion. So we try, we see everybody is doing something. Like, very easy example or very simple would be, you know, just particularly looking at the media nowadays, you see all these billboards, and now everybody is kind of bombarding you, do this, try this, you know, or, you know, in the movies especially, that's the greatest influence on everyone. So you try to do this and you will be happy. And then we think, yes, this is going to make me satisfied, this is going to fulfill all my hankerings and desires. And then we try it for something, and then we fail, essentially, and we become disappointed. So it's only just that initial excitement to try some kind of a product or to try some kind of way that is going, we think that is going to make us happy, but it doesn't, because we identify completely wrongly with that particular thing, or with just our particular material situation, which is not real. So whatever we identify with, and it's not really connected with us, ourselves, as the spirit soul, it's always going to be futile. Like here it is said, it's always futile. Any amount of sense gratification, it's always going to be futile. It will never satisfy us, because it has really nothing to do with us. You know, you try to be happy, but actually it doesn't refer to you at all as a person, as what our real identity is. So only when we come to the understanding what our real identity is, and we act on that particular platform, then only we can experience some happiness. Then really only actually we can experience bliss, which is spiritual, which has nothing to do with this material. And Srila Prabhupada explains that there are those basic principles, two principles of material existence: hankering and lamentation. So I said, we lament, we are frustrated. Why? Because we didn't achieve what we were expecting to achieve. And this is that great, grand illusion of this material world. And then again we hanker again, thinking that this is something that, or whatever, or this is the person maybe, or this is the thing, or this is the situation, or this is the activity, this is the work that is going to make us happy and satisfied. So we hanker. There's so much hankering. So we are just dreaming in the world of illusion. It's just a dream. Just like this analogy of a deer, that he is thinking. It's just thinking. It's just completely mental practically. I'm thinking there is a nice oasis with the water because I'm so thirsty and scorched by the heat of a desert, and I think I'm going to be happy if I reach that particular place. But that particular place doesn't exist. Doesn't exist in this particular situation. It exists somewhere else, but not at this particular moment, at this particular place. So illusion, or something that is temporary, it's defined as something that has real existence, but not maybe, as I said, at this particular moment, at this particular place. We don't say that oasis don't exist. Definitely there is, the water exists. But for the deer, the mistake is to find or search for it there where it doesn't exist. So this is the illusion. So it's not that we also think that happiness doesn't exist, that the perfect relationships don't exist, that the perfect justice doesn't exist, that the perfect love doesn't exist, that the perfect relationship don't exist. All these principles are most sublime principles. They're all perfect in some way, somewhere, but not on this particular planet where we live. This is one of the philosophical reasons that, for example, in the Western world, the early Western philosophers like Plato, for example, since I mentioned Suhotra Maharaj and starting with his book, so he usually refers to their kind of philosophies and tries to analyze. So he points out, like Plato points out, for example, that if we see that in this world there is no perfect justice, you can't get perfect justice. It's impossible. There will be always something that it won't make it up to the level or the way that we might be expecting. Or very often it's just the other way around. Many people who have nothing to do really with some particular activity or crime, they might be sentenced or whatever. Of course, in the ultimate sense we know everything is the law of karma and everything has sense in itself. But in general conception of the material world, there is no perfect justice. There is no perfect beauty in this material world. It's all just relative. It's all very relative. For somebody, something that is beautiful might not be to somebody else. So it's all relative. Then the love. There is no perfect love in this world, definitely. Unless it is reciprocated in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's all basically lust. So all these principles, he concluded that if we can't find them here in this material world, that it means that it must exist somewhere else. That therefore there has to be some world which is perfect and where all this particular conception must be existing in its fullness and its completeness. So therefore we see that in this material world we are hankering after something, but it's all temporary. And we are always frustrated at the end because we don't meet our expectations. And therefore this is why this world is filled with these two with all different kinds of disappointments. So we hanker after something, and even if we get it, we become frustrated or very quickly disinterested about that particular thing because it doesn't satisfy us, since we identify with something that we are not. We identify with this material body, which has really nothing to do with us ourselves. It's just the particular vehicle that is taking us from one point to another. That's all. So as long as we identify with that particular vehicle, we'll always meet with frustration and disappointment. And therefore here, Srila Prabhupada, in the purport, he's pointing out that person who is convinced, after all, finally, about the futility of this material world, then only he can go back home, back to Godhead. So this is what we have to understand. We have to have experience of the real substance, not just the shadow. What is the use of the shadow? It may look like something, but there is no substance. What's the use of it? Like you're looking at your own shadow, for example. It looks like a person, but where is the tangible substance? Where is the reality behind it? It's not there. So this material world, it's therefore described as something that exists, but because it is temporary, therefore it's called illusory. In Mayavad philosophy, they say that this world is illusory, that it doesn't exist, but we don't agree with that. Because the world exists, but we accept that it's illusory just on the basis because it's temporary. So it is temporary, and this is the greatest illusion that we actually fall in. This is the greatest illusion because we take it as something that is eternal. And we try to hold upon something that really won't last. And this is where the greatest frustration comes from. You know, you have some relationship, and even if it's good relationship, somehow or other you're able to maintain some kind of equilibrium in some sense, but then it doesn't last for long. Somebody has to die sooner or later. Relationship is broken. That's in the most ideal sense. But what to speak in the sense that actually we see that everybody is so self-centered and just thinking about their own whatever, sense gratification in one way or another. So therefore, ultimately it's unavoidable that some kind of frustration and disappointment is going to follow. So everything is temporary here in this material world. As I said, even if we have something that might be looking like, you know, it is there, it exists, it won't exist for a long time. It will disintegrate. It's the physical principle of entropy. Things disintegrate. They're not long-lasting. So it's foolish to be illusioned and think that whatever I gain in this material world, or whatever I might be hankering for, that it's, you know, it's going to last forever and it's going to keep me satisfied and happy. So therefore we have to have this particular understanding on the basis of this knowledge given in the scriptures. And as long people don't have the knowledge, they will be unable to understand the futility of this material world. There will always be an illusion, thinking and hankering, maybe if I get this, maybe if I get that, I will be happy. So in the future, basically just keeping postponing our happiness. Neither we were happy in the past, neither we are happy now with anything material. So the most logical conclusion is we'll never be happy in the future either. So then why we are running after such an illusory state? Because we don't know anything better. And because we are not exposed to something that gives us the real substance. We are just dealing with illusion. We are just dealing in illusion, as I said, in a sense that it's temporary. Things are here. Things are factual. This is our philosophy. It's not Mayavadi that things don't exist. No, they're here. They're factual. They exist, but on the temporary basis. And nothing temporary can satisfy the soul which is eternal. And to give these people... And to give this understanding to the people, it's something that is connected again to our activities that are going to follow for the next month. And this is the Sankirtan Yagya. To somehow or other bring people out of that illusory conception that in this world they're going to be happy. They're going to be satisfied by performing all different kinds of sinful activities actually, which they are caught further and further, more and more into this illusory, you know, real pool that is just pulling and die. Pulling them down deeper and deeper into the modes of ignorance and the lower levels of existence. They're like an example is given, like a fish caught in the net. You know, when the fish is caught in the net, that's called mohajala, fish caught in the net. Because all this world, it's like a net of different modes of material nature which are very nicely intertwined. And there are all different kinds of combinations and different kinds of varieties that are so attractive. So the fish gets caught in that net. But the more it struggles, the more it gets caught in that particular net. The more it gets bound, the more it gets conditioned. Because it doesn't know how to get out. Gets cut by those gills. And then it's caught. But if you know the system, if you know how not to be caught, then you don't get entangled. And then you don't have to suffer. But this is something that people don't know. They get entangled with this material world, not knowing what is the result of associating with the modes of the material nature. Therefore, even the whole system, Vedic system, is somehow or other to bring persons from the lower modes of material nature to the higher modes, and even from the mode of goodness, ultimately, till the mode of Shuddha Sattva, transcendental goodness. So that we don't get entangled in this material world. So we get bound by the modes of material nature if we don't know the science, how they work, how they influence us. But if we know, then we can get very easily liberated. And this is the whole knowledge presented in the especially Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavata. So if we know how we can deal in this world, and what is this world, what is the purpose of this material existence, and we understand its relationship with Krishna, we understand its relationship with us, ourselves, then there is no question of being miserable even while living in this particular place which has nothing to do with us. So this is how the pure devotees' existence is described, that even while living in this world, they're not affected by it, like a lotus in the water. Lotus is in the water, but it's outside of the water, it exists outside of the water. It's not affected by the whatever conditions of the water are. So this is the position of the pure devotee, or the devotee who is not affected by the lower modes of the material nature. And to have that understanding, of course, we have to apply the principles given in the scriptures. So this is something related to us, of course. But what about people who have no understanding whatsoever, who are living outside and they're still in that illusion, thinking that somehow or other I'm going to gain some happiness. Somehow or other, I'm going to be happy. I was just discussing with one boy this morning, And he told me how everybody smokes and everybody is kind of tempting him, you know, why don't you smoke, why are you so weird, why you are, you know, talking always about some philosophy, you know, why don't you talk about all these different other things anyway, they discuss, you know, which are pretty relevant for us. And they were kind of teasing him, you know, why don't you do all these things? Because people are in such ignorance that they can't understand that even on that package of the cigarette it's written, you know, if you smoke it's injurious to health, you're gonna help, you're gonna get cancer. And people are such an ignorance, they don't know what are the long lasting effects, what is the result of such kind of activity. They're in such ignorance, although it's just in front of them, it's just there, you buy that packet, it's written. There's so much in illusion that they can't understand even such a simple thing. Just because society is propagating, just because, as I said, they are in a particular environment, but because they don't have knowledge, they don't have understanding, therefore they buy it. They buy such a philosophy, not just the article in itself. So this is such a grand illusion that people are in, and somebody has to come and just break that bubble of illusion. You know, like, sometimes it pains maybe to break that bubble of illusion. Like those, you know, kids sometimes, you know, they blow that stuff, you know, get bubbles, you know, and then you can take some sharp object like needle or something, you pierce the bubble and just it bursts. So maybe sometimes it may feel, oh, my illusions will burst and it will pain a lot. But isn't that better that actually you don't live in any illusion whatsoever, because it's going to burst sooner or later. Either somebody's, you know, bursts it for you, or it's going to just, it won't last forever. It will burst sooner or later anyway. So better that it happens sooner and that we live in the world of reality, that we understand what the real reality is. And that reality is the most sublime. It's the most beautiful. It's not something that we should, you know, stay away from. No, it's something that we should embrace, because, as I said, we are eternal and that reality is absolute, it's eternal as well. So why to live in this bubble of illusion? And even that bubble of illusion, it doesn't make us happy. And that's the problem, because people, you know, just swing like a pendulum. Given that example is even like hankering, lamentation, boga tyaga, just living in that particular frame of life frame, you know, boga tyaga. I get frustrated and then I renounce. But again, because I don't have anything better, again I do the same thing and I'm hankering after something, and again I get frustrated and then maybe I renounce. Like person maybe who overeats, he takes something, some particular preparation in a far larger quantity that he can digest, and then he suffers, and then he said, never again I will do the same thing. But again, sometimes it happens, and again it suffers, and it's just perpetual practically. Why? Because people don't have knowledge, and people cannot control their senses. They cannot control their mind, they cannot control their gross senses. Why? Because there is no knowledge how to do it, and there is no higher text. Somehow or other we have had a chance to understand what is that reality, what is something that is deeply satisfied and happy. So it's our duty to share it with everybody else. And we have to burst that bubble for them. We have to take them out of the illusion. Sometimes it may seem a little harsh. Somebody may say, oh, why are you breaking my illusion? I was dreaming so nicely about this world. I had such a nice dreams, how I'm going to have a nice salary, how I'm going to have a nice family, how I'm going to live nicely, a nice house, a nice place, and blah, 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 all these different kinds of stuff. And you come and tell them, no, it's all illusion, it's all nonsense. You know, even if you gain any of this with such a hard work and so much effort, it's not going to last. So it's all useless, it's all futile. So people may not like that, but it's our duty to do that. If we think, oh, if we leave them in illusion, let them dream their dreams, that we are very kind upon them. This is complete Maya again. And this is neither beneficial for them, neither for us. Actually, then this is something that we are faulty of. It's our duty to make people wake up, to tell them, Jiv Jago, you know, wake up to the realities of this horrible material existence. Don't live in that dream world. Don't live in that illusion. So this month, somehow or other, at least we have this wonderful opportunity to get out and burst those bubbles of illusion of everyone and show them, hey, here is the reality. And reality is not bad as it might seem. People think if I don't have a dream that I'm going to be miserable. No, we have something better to offer. Far, far, far better, far greater than even what they can dream of. But we just have to present them with this particular type of knowledge. And then at least they will have some alternative to think about. And may might not take immediately, you know, they might not change their life immediately, but we understand that even a small amount, neha bikrama nashasti pratyavayana vidyate svalpamapyasya dharmasya trate mahato bhayat, that even a small advancement on this path of spiritual life can protect person from the most dangerous type of fear. Even small advancement. So any touch with a devotee, any touch with this Krishna consciousness will completely change the lives of everyone. Gradually. It doesn't matter. It might take maybe even for someone lifetimes. But if the seed is sown, then it will fructify, no matter how much time it might take. So at least we have to understand that even any slight touch that people will come with these books, it will change their lives sooner or later. The seed is there. It will just have to get a little more, you know, watered. And at least we can plant that seed. And whenever everything else will fructify, that depends on them. But the seed is there. The seed will be planted. And they cannot get away then from Krishna. Even if yesterday we heard Gopal Krishna Maharaj was saying, even if they touch the book, even if they read one shloka, even if they anything related to the Krishna, Krishna will never forget that. Krishna always looks something positive, looks at something good that any person had done. We know that those examples of Agasura, who just placed his tongue as a playground for the cowherd boys, this was enough for Krishna to appreciate and to give him liberation, just for such kind of act. Something simple, although he was such a great demon, or Putana achieved the position of the nurse. Just small little activity. Anything related to Krishna, Krishna appreciates so much that it's never lost, that it's on our eternal credit. So even if people do discuss something about Krishna, we shouldn't be attached to the result. We shouldn't immediately think, you know, somebody should become pure devotee within a few seconds. It doesn't happen. It might in some extraordinary cases. But somehow just be there, somehow or other to be present, somehow or other to remind people of Krishna. Even this is sufficient. You don't have to worry so much about results, what will happen. Result is there, but we have to do, you know, our part. We have to be present at least. In the Western world, what is happening, it's a whole different topic now, in a sense that, you know, they try either to make you, Krishna conscious movement, either they try to make it official religion, or either they try to proclaim it as some kind of a dangerous sect. This is what is going on. And both ways are, you know, both policies are very demonic policies. Why? Because they hamper your growth, spiritual growth, or the growth of such kind of any particular community, in a sense that they don't allow you to preach and present your philosophy to others. Why? If you're official religion, you're recognized, you get your own, whatever, you know, you may have your temples and everything, you know, you may get even some support, but they discourage you from preaching. They say, you just be where you are and you just practice nicely, but don't expand it. Or if they proclaim you as some kind of dangerous sect, they also ban you from performing any kind of other activities. Like, for example, I was just in France now. It's hardly any preaching going on. One devotee was trying to distribute books also. For 3 weeks, he couldn't distribute anything. Although he might go to any other place, you know, he's a very successful distributor. He had a hard time. Very few books went out. So that was government demonic propaganda. But we don't depend on that. Still, devotees go out, they preach, they try to, you know, somehow or other spread this Krishna conscious movement. So it doesn't matter ultimately on the external circumstances. But as I said, demonic policy is somehow or other to hamper the preaching movement. If there is no preaching, as Srila Prabhupada said, you know, this movement will be dead. Without books, without book distribution, without, you know, sharing this knowledge with others, how long you think this movement will last? Not very long. Whoever is here now, okay, fine. Even they won't be inspired to stay unless they share this knowledge with others. Even they will go away. they will be covered by the Maya, thinking that maybe there is something, there is some satisfaction and happiness in this temporary kind of cessation of the material senses. So this is complete illusion. So we have to get out and somehow or other present this knowledge, not just for sake of ourselves, but as I said, mostly for the sake of others. The more mercy we give, the more mercy we'll receive. The more we will understand, it won't remain just the theoretical knowledge. It will be very practical. We'll gain understanding, we'll get realizations that whatever has been said here, it is factual. And that's the way how to get that higher taste. How to understand the real value of this particular knowledge. By practically applying it, practically offering it to everybody else. So this is the process. This is the way through which we can get out and understand, get out of this material world and understand its illusory position, that temporary position, and get out of this conception of bhoga and tyaga, hankering, lamentation. It's all useless. It's all just like that mirage in the desert after which deer is running after. So we'll stop here, Hare Krishna, if there is maybe some quick question or comment because time is off. Yes, please.
Do we still fall into the body of
conception? The devotee who acts on the level of eating, sleeping, do we still call him to be on the bodily conception? Not necessary. If he does those activities for sake of propagating Krishna consciousness or for sake of, you know, spiritual advancement in any way, no. It's necessary to maintain this body. We can't reject this body. Like Sanatana Goswami wanted to commit suicide. There are so many examples. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you already given this body to men. You can't reject it. So we can't act artificially on the platform of not eating, not sleeping. This body needs, it's a machine, it needs some oil, it needs something to run on. So we can't just neglect any bodily, you know, demands. But we can utilize them in the service of Krishna. So we maintain the body, it's our duty to maintain the body. This body has been given to us, it doesn't belong to us. So it's our duty to maintain it. But it shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't be... The emphasis shouldn't be overly placed on just bodily demands. This is then animal life. We have to rise above. Even yesterday we heard, again Maharaj was saying, you know, we have to rise above the, you know, just basic animalistic propensities. So they're not all in all. But at least to some degree we have to understand that the body has to be maintained in order to function, in order for us to serve Krishna. Is that okay? Yeah, Hare Krishna. So thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrīmad Bhāgavatam ki jai.